the right to work law struck down. Is it unconstitutional? Pre-K moves forward, but the mayor isn't happy. A big jobs announcement and Tony Dungy sparks a controversy. That plus bees at the governor's resident, Brickyard 400 picks and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 25, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, there's a second ruling that finds the Indiana right to work law unconstitutional. It comes from a special judge in Lake County in a lawsuit brought by the Steelworkers Union. The state Supreme Court has already scheduled September arguments in the other case that challenges the 2012 law making union membership voluntary in all circumstances. Here is AFL-CIO President Brett Voorhees, followed by the author of the Right to Work Law, Jerry Tor.
I think if you probably do a study now, you can tell that since Right to Work's in, wages have gone down. So actually, it's bringing more people out to want to organize a union, to want to have that job security, to want to make a fair wage.
And the fact that they have to sue to try to be able to force people to belong to their organization because there are people who don't want to, that shows you exactly why we needed a Right to Work law in the first place.
Can the unions win this fight? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Brandon Smith, State House reporter for the Indiana Public Broadcasting, and Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Mike McDaniel, is this ruling significant?
Well, I think since it's the second one, the first case is already scheduled to be heard and ruled on by the Supreme Court in September.
Arguments is September 5th.
And so I totally expect that when the Supreme Court decides the initial case, that that will also cover the material that's in this decision, then we'll have it decided once and for all.
But the Attorney General has asked for a stay of this ruling.
In the
meantime, the first ruling was stayed by the judge when he issued it.
Yeah.
It's possible that the right to work law will be suspended.
It's possible, but not likely. And the Attorney General, as we've talked on here before, is doing exactly what he's supposed to defend the laws passed by the General Assembly, and he's in the process of doing that. But I totally suspect that this thing will be decided in September when the Supreme Court gets together again.
The unions lost this fight in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
They've won it in a couple of courtrooms. Mm-hmm. It's going to go to the state Supreme Court. Is that a favorable playing field?
Well, obviously, it's Republican-dominated, the state Supreme Court is. But, you know, the issue, Jerry Tor doesn't even understand the issue. This isn't about union membership. Okay, the Supreme Court decided that you can't be forced to be a member of a union, decades ago. The issue is whether or not the unions, who have a statutory responsibility to represent all the employees, whether they're union members or not, can charge for that service. That's what this is all about. And I hope the Supreme Court decides that they can, because what the Attorney General is trying to do is the same thing the legislature was trying to do, and that is to lower income to Indiana employees again. It's part of the reason why the gap in income for workers in this state has widened. And, you know, that's what they seem to have as their goal, is to make people who are working for a living earn less.
Well, Indiana first became a right-to-work state in 1957. The law was reversed in 1965, and now we're still fighting over it. Will this be cleared up any quicker than it was in the last century?
No, I suspect that this will go back and forth. If the Democrats can get back into power at some point, I suspect that we could see this law reversed. But I do think that what this comes down to in part, which is going to be very interesting for the Supreme Court, is this a notion of whether a union or a company can be considered a person in constitutional law. And the U.S. Supreme Court has decided that a business or an organization can be considered a person for fundraising purposes or for campaign finance. So it's going to be very tricky to see how all of this handles.
For free speech, too. They have First Amendment rights.
Exactly.
And including a right to religion, whatever the company's religion happens to be.
Although, well worth pointing out that the unions tried to fight this in federal court and lost.
They lost.
And this is, so there, right. This won't go beyond the state Supreme Court in this case.
Well, it won't go to federal court.
Right.
But, you know, we'll see.
Right, in order to win, they had to refile in state court. That was the first case that's going to be heard before the state Supreme Court was originally filed in federal court.
Right. So do the unions have a better chance?
I think they have a slightly better chance, but I've talked to a couple of legal experts who follow the state Supreme Court, and they say they're very deferential to the Indiana legislature. You have to clear a pretty high bar at the state Supreme Court to get a law that the legislature passed knocked down, and so it's going to be a tough road to hoe for unions.
Well, I mean, it's Republican control at the state Supreme Court, and that influences their ideology on this. I'd like to think that it was they're going to be completely open-minded, and I'm going to hold that thought.
We keep getting these statements from Greg Zeller that he first of all can't comment on issues like this, but he's just defending what the legislature has done. He has no ideological investment in
this. He has a responsibility to do what he's doing, and that's the way he reads the job description, and that's what he's done. He's done it consistently from the day he took over. In fact, he even met with the union folks about this particular case to explain how this system works. This is the way we test our laws in the state to go through this very process. So this is what's going on here. And he'll be sitting at that table representing the state of Indiana, as he should, when it happens in September. And again, if it happens on the second case, but I'm convinced they will be connected and they'll be decided in September.
So he's trying to lower wages. That's exactly what they're trying to do. And
you questioned whether or not he needed to defend the marriage statute. Does he need to defend this one?
I don't think he does. And I don't don't think he needs to defend or to prosecute, as he is, the issue of whether or not individuals under the federal plan can receive subsidies when there's no state exchange.
I just think that voters would be not happy at all for the attorney general to substitute his judgment repeatedly for the judgment of the legislature. Well, so when the legislature passes these laws.
What about the fact that the issue of the state exchanges is already on appeal, and yet he is still prosecuting?
You're not talking about
Obamacare.
We
are talking about that, because one of the things that's going to be one of the anomalies of this is if Mike Pence's Healthy Indiana gets the waiver and we start using that, the very poor people will have insurance. Great. But those in between who are getting subsidies, and there are hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers getting those, are going to be told no. So we're going to deprive them of insurance, and we're going to deprive workers of a living wage.
Well,
motto.
For the record, there were two federal court rulings this week regarding subsidies and Obamacare, and they were conflicting.
That means it's going to go to the Supreme Court.
And we don't have to prosecute it in the meanwhile and waste time and money.
Let's get back to the agenda. The Family and Social Services Administration announced the five counties this week that will take part in an early education pilot program beginning at the first of the year. Marion County is one of them, but Indianapolis Mayor Greg Ballard isn't celebrating.
The fact that we're an education reform-minded state and we don't have pre-K around the state is shocking and embarrassing.
Is this a good first start, do you think?
It's a good start, but come on, let's get to it.
And Delaney, who's that criticism directed at?
Well, I think he stuck his finger up to the knuckle right in the governor's eye, don't you? I mean, basically what he's saying is this is too little, too late, and get with it, and let's have pre-K across the board. And who is that directed at if not the governor?
Is that surprising commentary coming from the mayor?
Not really. I mean, he's frustrated. A lot of people were about pre-K, but to say that it's putting the finger in the eye of the governor is ridiculous, since the governor's the one that fought to get this thing, this pilot program. Remember, this pilot program died twice during the legislature. The governor revived it both times. So this isn't a poke at him, but it is a poke at the legislature, quite frankly, from the mayor, who is frustrated and thinks that we ought to have it and we should have had it before now. But a lot of people agree with that. A lot of people agree that we should have had it before now. But before now, it was a matter of whether or not you could afford it. Well, now we can, and they're starting a program. And as we've said here before,
a pilot program where the locals have to come up and look for hundreds of kids. Most of the five counties
are the biggest counties in Indiana. It's a very expensive pilot program.
Yeah, but it's a pilot program. The legislature didn't donate. It didn't contribute
any
money.
What I'm telling you is once this thing starts, as I've said it before, once you have this for a year, this thing will grow and grow and grow and grow, and you're going to have it statewide within 5 years. It'll just happen that way.
So the kids that are in preschool now are graduating from high school.
I think the first question is that the legislature is going to meet in January and come up with a new budget. At the same time that this pilot program begins, will there be pre-K money in that budget?
No. I don't think so. I don't even think the governor's going to push for it. He's said now that the pilot program has started to get rolled out that he's going to follow what the legislature wants to do in that he's going to hold off on pushing for an expansion of the program, wait and see what this study that's part of this pilot program is going to produce, and then come back to the legislature if he's still around.
But this isn't the first time pre-K has been done and studied. And everywhere it's been done, it's been a positive for the achievement of kids that are in it. So we don't need to study it. What we need to do is put the money.
So I'm not sure that's completely true. I do think there have been studies and there have been places where it has not been particularly shown to be successful.
Right.
I think in most cases it can be very successful. It's successful in the early years, especially.
Which is what it is.
But it's
successful to a point.
What she's saying is studies have shown that by fourth or fifth grade, the benefits are gone.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem of the fourth and fifth grade.
We will have this statewide
within 5 years. Which we're supposed to be in education reform already.
Yeah. You say statewide in 5 years.
Uh-huh. I think Mike's right. True.
I do think that it will be statewide quickly because other communities aren't going to put up with
it's going to grow.
Them getting it over here and we're not getting it here. But I also think it's not going to be this budget.
Yep. But we still don't even have mandatory kindergarten.
Well, that's another problem.
Although everybody will tell you 97% of the eligible kids go, right?
Yeah.
All right.
And parents are paying for it in many cases.
There is mixed news on the jobs front. The unemployment rate is up slightly in Indiana, but ground was broken this week on the new GE Aviation factory in West Lafayette. And the governor joined executives from Lowe's Home Improvements to announce plans to bring about 1,000 jobs to Indianapolis by 2016. The new call center at Intech Park on the city's northwest side will open in February of next year. Lowe's, which is based in North Carolina, is taking over a vacant building and will spend $20 million to make it fit the company's needs. Vice President Don Easterling of Lowe's says the company chose Indianapolis after an extensive search.
We started years ago looking at 900 different sites, and we've only opened two corporate footprints from those 900 sites. One was in Albuquerque, and now one here in Indianapolis.
Leslie Weidenbender, is that a big deal?
Well, anytime you're bringing additional jobs to the state, it's good. I mean, that's a good thing. These are not the kind of jobs, though, that tend to lead to higher skills and better jobs down the road, and they tend to not be particularly high-paying jobs. So it's a good thing. It's not going to change the Indiana economy, that's for sure.
Lowe's wouldn't talk about salaries, although they said they're not minimum wage jobs, and most of them require some training. But primarily they're call center jobs.
Right. The GE Aviation one is a big announcement because those are the kind of high-skilled jobs that everybody in Indiana is talking about we're trying to attract. The call center, 1,000 jobs is 1,000 jobs. That's Hoosiers who are going to have jobs who maybe right now don't. But, yeah, it's nothing to throw a huge party over.
Yet they did. The mayor and the governor were there.
Sure. Anytime you announce 1,000 jobs, it's a good thing for the state. Since 2009, which was our lowest point of the number of people we had employed, we've brought 235,000 jobs to Indiana. About 80,000 of those have been in manufacturing, which in that time period makes us the second biggest concentration of manufacturing jobs in the United States. And so it's growing. It's happening. The things that have been put in place, the General Assembly here, are working and starting to grow. And as the economy recovers, this economy will boom again.
And the governor got back this week from the air show in England. There, he was encouraged to attend by GE Aviation. And the folks at the Commerce Department tell me they expect that a lot of suppliers are going to start moving into north-central Indiana.
That would be good news. It would certainly be much better news. I mean, you're right. 1,000 jobs is 1,000 jobs. But if they're paying $10 or $12 an hour, they're not sufficient to support a family. And the economic, you know, we have employment growing, okay? The question is our income growing as a proportion of the country? And the answer is no. And that's a combination of both right to work and the kinds of jobs that we're attracting. And it we need to have not only job growth, but job growth that can support a family. And that's where we're lagging.
The folks from Lowe's said they checked out 900 sites. They sent three search teams here, one to check out logistics, one to check out Ivy Tech and universities to find out about training, and one they said they just sent out to restaurants, coffee shops and the like, to check out customer service and just see what the atmosphere is like around here, and they were impressed.
Well, that's exciting. I mean, that's what you want to hear, right?
Yeah.
You
don't, quality of life.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, that bodes well for maybe bringing in future jobs and those kinds of things. And so it's always good news.
They call it quality of place.
We have great growth potential.
And we've had, you know, our for example, housing here is a lot less expensive than it is at many of their other locations, including North Carolina. Yeah. So there are reasons to attract jobs here. We just have to attract the right kind
of
jobs.
It. Yeah, the biggest concentration of manufacturing jobs, second in the country.
Yeah, well, our income still lags.
Yeah.
That's
time
the problem.
Now.
That
it's
was
coming.
The measure
it's
that
coming.
Mitch Daniels said was
it's
the
coming,
only
Ann.
Measure
You're right.
of
it's
success.
Coming right.
Because
he
of
did
the
say
things
only,
of the legislative
and he acknowledged at the end of his term that it was too,
right.
it was hard to push.
Yeah.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Mike Pence delivering on his promise to make jobs the top priority in his administration? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it's too soon to tell. Last week's question was, if Joe Hogsett runs for mayor, what category will his decision fit into? 17% said broken pledge, 17% said flip-flop, 43% said change of heart, and 23% said revelation. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Former Indianapolis Colts coach Tony Dungy sparked a controversy this week with comments about Michael Sam, the first openly gay player in the NFL. Dungy was quoted as saying, "I wouldn't have taken him in the draft, not because I don't believe Michael Sam should have a chance to play, but I wouldn't want to deal with all of it." Sam seems to be taking it in stride.
Thank God he wasn't a St. Louis Rams coach. But but I have a great respect for Coach Dungy, and like everyone in America, everyone has entitled their own opinions.
Brandon Smith, who handled this better, Michael Sam or Tony Dungy?
Michael Sam. Tony Dungy's thought of as a leader, and rightly so, in the NFL and in the community in a lot of the places he's coached and played. This didn't sound like the comments of a leader. He dodged the issue. He shouldn't be afraid of the attention. First of all, there hasn't been, other than Tony Dungy generating a lot of it this week. And if it's about what he believes about gay people, then just say that. But if it's not, then he was dodging an issue here.
Well, he is a leader, and he's written books about subject outside of football, and he at first blamed the reporter for not asking the right questions. Then he kind of backtracked in some of his statements, but then he stepped in it again, talking about Michael Sam's lifestyle. Were you surprised by these developments?
I'm not really that surprised. I mean, you know, Tony Dungy, I think, tries to be very honest when he's speaking about his thoughts and his feelings. That's always been my impression of him. Should he have gone there? Would it have been better for his maybe reputation or whatever if he hadn't? Absolutely. But I think he was just trying to be honest that he would not, this is not a attention that he would have wanted to bring onto his team. You can interpret that to mean whatever I guess that you want it to mean, but I don't think he went so far as to say something that was wrong.
Well, when he was the Colts coach, he took part in fundraisers for organizations fighting gay marriage in Indiana. Clearly, he's got a position that...
He clearly has a position, but I think you have to give Michael Sam credit for handling that with an incredible amount of grace for somebody his age. I mean, I think he did exactly what he should have done. He didn't badmouth Tony Dungy in any way, and I think that was... That was a role model for a lot of young people in his situation.
One of Dungy's claims was that the reporter talked to him weeks in advance and saved this story for the beginning of training camp. Is there a problem with that?
Well, I don't know about the timing of all the interviews and how it came down and whether he's held the story or not. But I appreciate Tony Dungy's honesty. I know exactly what he was trying to say here. He wasn't commenting about this guy's sexuality. He was saying that as a coach or as a GM, putting this guy on your team could be a major distraction. And if you're trying to concentrate on winning football games, do you really want to deal with that distraction? And he said, no, I don't. And that was a very honest thing for him to say. When the St. Louis Rams drafted this young man, And you know, I don't know how good a player he is, but there's questions when the draft came up about his ability and whether or not he deserved to be as high as he was. Well, what happens if this guy is not good enough to make this team? If he doesn't make the team, the speculation around why he didn't make the team is going to be unbelievable. So is that a distraction? I mean, there are all kind of questions around this. I understand. I respect Tony Dungy's honesty. I don't think it was the smartest thing for him to say, you know, based on everything else I know about Tony Dungy. But I don't think he has a negative or, you know, mean-spirited bone in his body. And he's been a great leader. And I think he was just being honest.
I think that's right. He said he still loves Michael Sam.
Well,
so here's something different. The governor's residence has a new attraction, a beehive. Indiana's First Lady, Karen Pence, helped unveil the beehive this week. The Indiana Beekeepers Association donated the bees, and the hive will help maintain them. And they donated the bees, and the hive will help maintain them. The purpose is to show how important bees really are to Indiana's agriculture industry. The bees will help pollinate the vegetable and flower gardens at the residence. Bees collect 66 pounds of pollen per year per hive. The First Lady says bees help pollinate plants that make up roughly a third of our diet. Mike McDaniel, will those bees sting Democrats?
Probably. And probably also Republicans and anybody else in the neighborhood. But look, this was a great moment for the beekeepers to educate the public about why they're important, and they are important. And Indiana being a huge ag state, 83% of our land in this state is devoted to agriculture in some way, shape, or form. And so this was an important way for them to make that message important. And it took the Pences to answer the age-old question.
Which is?
To be or not to be.
And they obviously, to be is the answer. The governor said that it's creating a lot of buzz.
But it is. I just have one question. Are they going to keep it in Josie's Orr's birdcage so that it finally has a function out there or not?
I don't think so.
I was just asking.
Let's move on. Time now for our annual Brickyard 400 picks. Who will win the Brickyard 400? And Delaney?
I'm going with Danica Patrick. It's finally her time.
In NASCAR?
She doesn't run.
She is. She does run in NASCAR. Okay. She doesn't run as well as she did in IndyCar.
Well, maybe. Who knows? I gotta pick the chick.
Mike McDaniel.
In honor of our good friend Rexford Carla Early, who's celebrating his 80th birthday this week, I'm picking his favorite, Tony Stewart.
There you go.
Indiana driver.
Absolutely.
Past winner.
Rex loves Tony, and it'd be fun to have Tony win again.
Brandon?
I'm going with the pride of Columbia, Missouri, home of the Missouri Tigers, Carl Edwards.
And that's why you're wearing
the ring. That's why I'm wearing the ring.
And the colors.
And the colors.
Okay.
I am always privileged to be on this particular show because John Katzenberger is always on vacation, and I always pick Jeff Gordon, and I'm sticking with him.
Jeff Gordon first won the Brickyard 400 20 years ago, the inaugural race.
Yep,
and he said this week that it changed his life in ways he couldn't imagine. I always pick Jeff Gordon, too.
Well, you know, he was a sprint car driver for Raleigh Helmling in my hometown of Vincennes. So I have another reason to choose him.
There you go.
You know, with all the that we know about this and the interest that I find just in this room, you'd think they wouldn't have trouble with ticket sales, but they're down 10%.
They're down all over the country for NASCAR, and part of that was part of the recession, but it's coming back. They're starting to get crowds again. I look for them to have a good weekend.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting, and Leslie Weidenbender of thestatehousefile.com. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.